You're listening to Advocate Radio. This is the Lake Highlands podcast for Tuesday, March 27th, 2012. I'm Carrie Mitchell, an editor at Advocate Magazines, and with me today are regular podcasters, Ellen Rapp.
Hi, Carrie. Good to be here.
And Carol Toller. Glad to have you, Carol.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to be back, and today we're going to talk about a couple of different things that have been gathering some attention on the blog in recent months. One is the apartments proposed near White Rock Lake at Lothar and Northwest Highway, which Ellen wrote about in her column in April's magazine, and as well as hit and runs, which sadly has been a topic of conversation in recent months, and Carol actually witnessed one
recently.
So let's start with apartments. Ellen, you focused your column on the fact that you are kind of considering these apartments that are going to be built, but you have some hesitations. Tell us a little bit about these apartments at White Rock Lake.
Okay, well, first of all, 350 is the number that I think is proposed, the number of actual units. So to me, that seems like a lot. And I always sort of, you know, cringe when I hear about these huge numbers that they want to put there on this very steep land.
And the land is, let's specify, it's where Duncan's Liquor is now.
Right.
The apartments would be on the north, west corner, is that correct?
That is correct.
Northwest Highway and Lothar right there.
And they would build some kind of, they're planning on building a footbridge access to the White Rock Station.
Right. The whole point of this is you've got access to the White Rock Station, DART station there, mm-hmm. as well as, you know, you're a hop, skip, and a jump away from the trail right there, the White Rock Creek Trail right there.
Right. So, once again, I think the dream tenants would be the young, urban, employed, probably without children, because there's really no place for kids to play unless you, I suppose, take them over to the park, which is Flagpole Hill. To me, the area there is very sort of still, like, except for the traffic on Northwest Highway, it's still that sort of country feeling Flagpole Hill type of place where you ride by on your bike.
Right.
So it's a beautiful area. It's a lot of it's under construction now because of the Northwest Highway construction, but when that's finished, it really is beautiful. And on a pretty day, you can see bikers and hikers and joggers and all that.
And horses.
Yes, and horses. It's really beautiful. And there's a lot of construction of new housing over there, kind of a bunch of tear downs and stuff. Over on Go Forth and all that stuff. It's beautiful. You can understand why somebody would want to live there, but it's a tiny piece of land, and that's going to be dense apartments.
Probably, right. Now, there's pros and cons for all of that. I mean, if you're going to put a building there that had only 25 units, well, that would be probably even sillier because there's just not a lot of other infrastructure around there, and you're going to need some kind of critical mass to make it worthwhile for the station, perhaps to have some retail. Someone on the blog pointed out there's not a lot of groceries stores around there. That, you know, if you want to go grocery shopping, you're probably still going to need a car unless you really like just riding your bike with a basket, you know, somewhere. Or maybe Duncan's will still, you know, become a convenience store. But also, one stop away on the train from the town center. That sounds really good. Complete adjacent access to the White Rock Lake Trail. That sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. So it could be a really great thing. And also, it would even, as one other blog commenter pointed out, it would even be a way of getting more shopping, more shoppers, more people ready to spend some money, or you know, if they rode their bikes down to the town center, because that would be a great destination for just an evening's bike ride.
And I guess if you think this complex seems to be aiming at people who are going to be walking, riding bikes, that sort of thing, that's who their target market
right.
is, then they might be pretty likely to jump on the trail or jump on the DART train and hop right over there.
Right. So it sounds good. Now, A lot of questions were raised by the fact that the developer is Winston Capital, which doesn't have a great reputation. I think they were the developers or the owners of the Northwest Terrace Apartments at was it Northwest Highway and Plano Road that mm-hmm. were had a terrible reputation and finally were actually just torn down in 2006. However, is it Winston Capital that also runs the Village? And those are very well managed. So that's the question. What's going to be their business model on this? Is it going to be like the Village? If they can convince us of that, we might even be happy.
Well, and I don't know. When we did a little, well, when we were kind of looking at the numbers of who commented on what on the initial post that was written about this, you know, 25% of the commenters were pretty adamantly against the idea, simply because the neighborhood already has too many apartments. And I think the scary thing for people in Lake Highlands is that, yes, maybe they're initially beautiful and clean and nice and lovely, but give it 15 years.
Yeah, then what
or
happens?
Or maybe even five.
Right, yeah. Maybe five.
You know, my husband and I enjoy going to Mockingbird Station, eating out, and seeing movies at the Angelica. And if I don't know the occupancy rate of the apartments at Mockingbird Station, but just sitting at the sushi place and looking out across, they don't look full. There are clearly some empty ones there. And Mockingbird Station is lovely and has lots of amenities and has a grocery store within walking distance. And, you know, if that's not full, you know, it's hard for me to envision that a place one stop away, because you're right, the town center is one stop away going north, but one stop away going south would be Mockingbird Station. So, you know, Flagpole Hill is lovely, and nice apartments there would certainly appeal to some people who love White Rock Lake and love the trails. You know, how can, you know, to fill up 350 is hard for me to envision. Mm-hmm. It depends on the rates. It depends on a lot of things. But the people who are commenting saying, you made a good point that there's a lot of not in my backyard sentiment. And nobody likes to be the not in my backyard person. But it is true that our biggest problem in Lake Highlands is we've got all the apartments we can handle. It'd be nice to replace some of the aging stock we've got. Even if we replace it with something nice, I think what we don't want to do is just add to.
Exactly. Now, there is one good point, though, also, which is that this is not our district, really. It's not Jerry Allen's district. It's District 9, Sheffy Cadain's district. And I believe it is also DISD.
Yes, it is.
So this would not be adding to, say, if families with kids moved
right.
in, it wouldn't be adding to the Richardson School District. So, so that was another point one of the bloggers made, which I thought that some of them were very good. You know, thinking, now hold on. You're thinking you're going to have, you know, more crowding in the schools or something like that, but this is DISD. So,
and as long as it is upper crust, high rents, it doesn't compete with what we have, which is Section 8 low rent housing. But at some point in the future, when they meet in the middle and it becomes older stock, then the laws of supply and demand say the competition drives down the rates.
Well, but that's why, and that is why they just don't really seem to allow the Village complex to get to that point. You know, they are always maintaining it, putting in new buildings if they need to, if it gets too shabby. So that could be a good business model. And I guess the one thing I'm just going to say again, 350. Now I know that gives everybody pause. If you're a developer, of course, I suppose
you're going to want to get the most bang.
Yeah, but I think you'll build as many as they say you can. I mean, everybody says it's because of financial reasons, but if they said you could build 500, I guess you'd build 500. The point is, at some point, those you're really being unrealistic. And I think maybe my gut feeling is 350 is unrealistic.
I'd love to know what Prescott thinks, because I'd love to know if they think that a numbers that high would tap into their market, because they're getting ready to break ground in 2012 on their apartments one stop over.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know how they think 350 cuts into what their expectations are for what they're fixing to build.
Well, and not to mention that not only are we talking about the apartments Prescott is planning to build on the town center land itself, but the fact that they also own the land south of that on Spielman, where those apartments have been vacated. But they, as far as I know, they still own it, and the eventual plan, once who knows what, is to build more apartments there too. So we're talking about town center, White Rock Station, land south of Scalman, you know, all kind of coming online around the same time. And as history has shown us, sometimes it all kind of goes offline around the same time. So
that's right.
I think that's the scary part,
yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
And how much can the market really hold? If you have the choice between, if you're a young urban employed person and you have the choice between an empty unit in Mockingbird Station or, yeah, you know, an empty unit in Lake Highlands, what do you pick?
Yeah.
All things being equal, which who knows if they will be. I don't know if rents will be the same or anything like that.
You know, and the key is for us to, as a community, to not be reactionary, but us to be smart and, you know, communicate. And, you know, there is a limit to what
we can reduce
control. Yeah, there's a limit to what control we have, but there's also a need to be informed and have to utilize the influence that we do have, and just to be smart.
Right, and just to also, before we can maybe just sit back a little bit. There should be a public hearing for one thing, and I tried to find out from Councilman Cadane's office today if one has been scheduled yet. But they did not have one on the calendar yet. There should be one possibly in April, and when we hear of one, we'll let you know. Also, keep in mind that they would have to do a floodplain study anyway, because that is a very flood-prone area.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't build anything until after doing a floodplain study.
There's still a lot of ifs on this project.
Yeah.
All right. So, Carol, not too long ago, you I can't remember if you were turning out of a parking lot or something like turning in, and you saw a hit-and-run accident. Tell us about that.
I was turning into a parking lot on Scalman, into the McDonald's parking lot, and there was a young woman traveling beside me, and as I turned into a parking lot, another car pulled out of the parking lot and broadsided her and spun her around, and the hitter sat for a minute in the middle of the street and clearly deciding what to do, and after a few minutes of sitting there, sped away. And the girl did what most 20, in my opinion, I'm going to give you my opinion, what most 20-year-olds do, this in, since I have four kids in their 20s, I'm giving you my opinion, but she did what most 20-year-olds these days, in my opinion, do, which is she picked up her cell phone and began calling and sat there in the middle of the street and talked on her phone. Now, I don't know who she was calling. It was my impression that she was calling a loved one. But she talked on the phone for several minutes in the middle of the street. And, you know, it caused me to think, what should she have been doing? Because she was not doing what I thought was a prudent thing to be doing, sitting in the middle of the street talking on her phone. And I kind of waited for her to try to see if I could help her or give her my phone number as a witness, because she was hit. It was not her fault, and I knew that she was going to probably want, it was clear that she was okay physically. But anyway, I, you know, kind of, honestly, got kind of impatient with her, because I kind of had places to be and wanted to make sure she was okay, but you know, I wasn't going to stand there forever and wait for her to get off the phone.
No, you're probably going to saunter into the middle of the street.
Well, I finally did saunter
okay
in the middle of the street, and try, you know, telling her to, and she was youngish, And so I was kind of
probably in shock, and
she probably was. And we had commenters that said, you know, look, Carol, you can't. You know, she was in shock. She was spun around. She didn't really know what to do. And I don't know that any of my four kids would have known what to do either. But I'm not sure that talking on her phone for a lengthy period of time was the right thing to do. So I went on some websites to see if I could figure out what was the right thing to do. And for the most part, they agreed that you should move your car out of the middle of a busy street just so that you will not be injured and hit again, and so that other people will not be injured, because she was a little bit of the crest of a hill, and I don't know that it was that she was real easy to be seen where she was. She was facing the wrong way at this point because she'd been spun around. So I, you know, encouraged her to get out of the middle of the street. But I think there, I did find one website that says call the police and stay where you are so that you can establish that it was not your fault.
Right.
You know, I guess if you, you know, I think there's a financial motivation to do that so that you can make sure that their insurance pays. But I think, especially if you're at risk, if you're on LBJ Freeway, if you're in the middle of a busy road, I think you're at risk there and you probably should move. I do think most people now have a phone that has a camera, and you can probably establish what happened by taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said in what I wrote, she could have taken pictures, or I really should have been the one taking pictures since I had my wits about me. And one of the commenters reminded me that I was the one who probably should have taken the pictures because I wasn't freaked out. And she's right, I should have. I didn't think about it. I did try to run after the vehicle and get the license plate, and I couldn't see that far, probably because I'm old, but because they were in a big hurry to get the heck out of there. But it is pretty sad to think that there have been a lot of hit and runs lately.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy North said it's happened to her husband twice. Christina Hughes Babb said that there have even been some hit and runs that were intentional crime opportunities,
mm-hmm.
where the hitter is someone who's trying to take advantage of you. So you get out of the car and then they're either stealing your stuff or whatever. So it's worth it to know and to advise your kids, especially because, frankly, our kids are probably out later at night than I know for me. I'm mm-hmm. in bed by 10 o'clock probably, but our kids are out late, and if they get hit at midnight, chances are good that somebody may be up to no good, the person who maybe is hitting them at a red light or whatever. So they get out, and perhaps perhaps our kids may be a victim of a crime at that point. So it's worth it to have a conversation, I think, with our kids. What would you do if someone hits you in the middle of an intersection? What do you do? Do you move the car? Do you take a picture? Whatever. Do you mm-hmm. confront the person if it's their fault? Do you have some kind of a confrontation or argument or not?
Right.
Do you call the police?
Would you have felt that maybe you should call the police?
I probably should have. You know, I was kind of frustrated with this girl, thinking she was not being responsible, and I probably should have been the responsible one.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm not. It's hard to know what to do in those situations.
Looking back, I should have been the responsible one.
My one and only wreck of my life was when I probably within weeks of turning 16 and getting my driver's license, and it was me and my sister in the passenger seat, and I was coming out of a place that I didn't realize I was going across an intersection, and I didn't realize there was a no left turn sign at the median until I got to the median and I was trying to turn left. And then I freaked out because, of course, I'm young and I'm going, oh, I don't want to break the law. You know, now I would just turn left and go, whoops, you know, and deal with the ticket if I needed to. But instead, I tried to go across the lanes of traffic and got rear-ended by somebody who spun me around in the back. And thankfully, it was a few seconds before that, my sister would have been hit. So, you know, it was just one of those, oh. But my first phone call... well, actually, I don't even know. I was young, so cell phones might not have been around then.
Right.
I don't know how I called my parents. A couple of nice people stopped, and the person left. That was a hit and run. That was the only accident I'd ever been in. It was my fault because I was crossing lanes of traffic and was hit by somebody who was not breaking the law. But the person who hit me still broke the law by leaving.
I witnessed a crash where the person left, walked away from the wreck and walked away from their vehicle. And I can't remember if it was their fault or not, but
they
obviously were not in of a mood to converse with the police for some reason or another. And so they were willing to walk away from the vehicle. So, I remember hearing a speech from Chief Kunkel, former Dallas Police Chief Kunkel, and he said, at any given time during the day, a certain percentage, and I wish I could remember what percentage he said, of the police are, of the drivers on the road are impaired of one way or another, or they're wanted, or whatever, there's just people out there on the road that you just don't want to mess with. And at night, it's a higher percentage. Mm-hmm. And so, you just got to be careful. And there's just times when, even if you are the victim of a hit and run, there are times to not, it's better not to have the confrontation with mm-hmm. the person. It's better to let them go and handle it later with your insurance company, and just be on your merry way. And that's another talk we have. You don't always just just wave the person on and say, never mind. But with certain people, that's a person you don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time with.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least not
a police officer there.
Yeah. But I probably the 911 call should have been made immediately.
Right.
And there could have been a policeman right there. And if it's possible that person would not have fled if the policeman had gotten there quick enough.
Or what, at least a policeman has the authority, maybe more than you would feel like, to go up to her and say, can I be helpful? Maybe you want to move your car.
Yeah. Yes.
So.
She would have taken his advice where she, and she, she might have looked at me and said, who's this crazy lady coming over to me in the middle of the street? She would have taken his advice.
I'm sure if I would have seen you in the middle of the street, Carol, I would have thought, oh, thank God, someone's coming to rescue me.
Well, no, she may not have thought. And, the other thing is a lady from McDonald's came out in her McDonald's outfit kind of trying to talk to her. And she kind of ignored both of us. So, she just didn't know what to do, I think. And she probably was freaked out. But it's probably a conversation to have with your kid before they get in the car and not after the fact.
Good point. Well, let's hope that's the last of the hit and runs for a while. I mean, there's just been too many tragedies, as Christina wrote about to Andrew Green, of course, in the March magazine, and that story, which is just heartbreaking. When I talked to Christina about that story, she cried through the whole interview, could barely tell me about it without crying, and then when I read it, I just bawled too. It's just hard stuff. Really hard stuff.
And that's a whole nother factor because, I'm not a pedestrian in the neighborhood other than kind of walking out to get my paper, basically, or walking out to talk to the neighbors. I don't do a lot of walking in the neighborhood. But we have a lot of people in our neighborhood who do walk, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. high school kids. We have a lot of people in our neighborhood who are walking, and they are at risk. And, mm-hmm. The roads in Lake Highlands are major roads. Skillman, Abrams, Royal, mm-hmm. Walnut Hill. Mm-hmm. These are major Dallas thoroughfares.
Right.
And if you, if somebody, runs up on the curb onto the sidewalk or has a crash that throws them up onto the sidewalk, or if you're crossing one of the, what you think of as your neighborhood roadway, it's a major Dallas thoroughfare, and so you really are at risk. And we've had a couple of incidents this year of Lake Highlands High School students, being hit and killed. And it is scary to send your kid out and know that they could be in danger.
Yeah. And I think sometimes I was driving along Forest yesterday and near Idalia, and of course there's apartments that just span the length of Forest on that street. And there just really aren't many crosswalk opportunities there either. I mean, I'm sure you can get annoyed driving on Forest because you're like, all these people are just running out in front of me.
Yep.
At the same time, for them to cross at the crosswalk pretty much adds another, 10 times the length of what you could walk if you just crossed the street, because there just really aren't that many. It's just not pedestrian friendly. Mm-hmm.
And it is frustrating because there does seem to be a I dare you to hit me mentality with the pedestrians. But from the pedestrian point of view, if you live on an apartment on Forest, you just kind of think of that as your street. Mm-hmm. That's the street I live on, Forest Lane. And so, you just don't think of that as a big dangerous road. That's just my street. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's a lackadaisical outlook of, I'm just going to cross the road and go over and buy a Coke.
Right.
And it's a major thoroughfare. And mm-hmm. That's a talk that everybody's mom should have with them about the danger of that big of a
right.
road.
Oh, I know. And I think about, my elementary school was across a busy street from my neighborhood growing up. And, my friends and I mean, fourth graders, jaywalking across the street, running across the street. It was stupid. We were stupid. But thank God nobody ever got hit or hurt. It just, kids are, I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it, kids are stupid.
Kids
they
are stupid.
They don't think about long-term true. Consequences and their brains, scientific, I've read books on this because I'm already fearing teenagers.
I happened to sit through about 5 minutes of my own son's driver training, and they were showing them a film that made that exact point. Children's brain, well, they didn't say that.
Well, okay, yeah.
The children that you want to not hit are not, their brains, they just don't think about the road the same way that an adult mm-hmm. does, and it's up to you as a driver. So that was the
it's
point.
It's totally true. And I should clarify, our kids are actually really smart. It's just they don't think ahead. Maybe that's what I mean by stupid.
Well, they also could have said in driver's training, you're not as smart as you think you are.
I heard some very wise words when I took driver's training. Don't drive like a parent and don't drive like a child. Drive like an adult. And that does make, don't drive yes. like a parent, meaning I'll show this person, and don't drive like a child in a haphazard way. But
it just isn't, it's scary. We just finished this whole story on cycling and pedestrians and all that stuff. It's hard. It's a hard place to be a cyclist or a pedestrian. Dallas is and Texas as a whole, I've lived in different places in Texas. We are very aggressive and selfish drivers. You almost have to be in order to survive on the roads here. And you mix that with people. I saw a family of five bicycling from essentially the east side of Forest Hills to the Arboretum on Saturday. And I thought they were crazy. I mean, they were doing it, and I applaud them for trying to cycle as opposed to take a car, because you can't even park at the Arboretum on Saturdays, it's too busy. Yet I was going, how are you gonna get those children across Garland? I went the other way. I didn't even want to watch. I was scared of what would happen. So I don't, that's a whole other topic for another day. Let's move on to shameless plugs. What do we have this week?
Well, this Friday night, March 31st, is that Friday night? I think it is.
I believe it is.
March 31st is the Exchange Club's casino night and auction. Their big fundraiser at Park Lane Ranch. It starts at 6 p.m. It should be lots of fun, very exciting. Exchange Club is a fun group, and they always put on a great party.
This is their big fundraiser, too.
Correct.
Right? Actually, it's Saturday night.
Okay, Saturday night. I should have known that they do it Saturday night. Casino night and auction, and it starts at 6 p.m.
Great.
You can go to their website and find out more about tickets and all that good stuff.
We'll post a link on the post. My shameless plug is something that's in Ellen's neck of the woods, which was I got to attend the Moss Haven Outdoor Learning Garden. This is probably not the correct term. There's lots of terminology that gets thrown around.
Yeah,
events,
I think it's OL
sometimes. It's OLE, O-L-E, and I can't remember what E stands for.
Environment? Okay, I'm sorry, I don't know.
No,
I'm just talking off the top of my head.
Anyway, fun stuff. But it was fun. It was fun to see, I think this is the maybe third or second in the Lake Highlands area. Merriman Park has one, and I heard that maybe Aikens is going to get one. It's not, from what I learned Friday, is it is not easy to have an outdoor garden at a school or get one built. The easy part is going to be see those little herbs grow and to fruition. The hard part has been making it happen.
Well, and keeping it up. I mean,
right. They have to have an exit strategy for the garden. That's interesting. What's going to happen if, obviously the PT there is pumped and excited and ready to, support it and keep going. But what happens if they all leave and the next crop of parents aren't pumped and excited? So there's an exit plan for the garden.
Mm-hmm.
It is very interesting. I learned a lot. I was expecting to see little children plant herbs, and I did, but I learned a lot more than that. So we have a video coming this week, and also we'll be writing about it for the May issue, so make sure to look for that.
I love how gardening teaches kids a long-term outlook, and how, you know, you do something today and you don't see immediate results. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
That's a great lesson for today's children. Mm-hmm. Too. It really is. And just, you know, the point, there's so many good things about gardening, but one of them, of course, is kids spend so much more time in the classroom these days, and that classroom time is so structured. You know, I think one parent commented to me that teachers don't get a chance to think outside the box these days because they have so many boxes to check off. Mm-hmm. And the garden gives them an opportunity to just do something different.
Right.
So, and teach children a different way. So it was fun to see that, and maybe we'll see more of those in Lake Highlands. Thanks for listening to the Lake Highlands podcast. We'll see you soon.